It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. We are going to have a lot of fun. Denise Howell is here, the Internet's attorney. David Ruddock, editor-in-chief of Android Police, and our dear friend iJustine. Lots to talk about. CES was this week. Was there anything worth seeing? And is this the future of the Consumer Electronics Show? We'll also talk about TikTok, Xiaomi, Comac, and Huawei, all companies the U.S. wants to ban. And finally, the future of the city of the future. Mark Lohr wants to build it. It's all coming up next on TWiT.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is TWiT, This Week in Tech. Episode 806, recorded Sunday, January 17th, 2021. Make hella happen. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Stamps.com. Stamps.com allows businesses to do all their mailing and shipping right from their computer. No need to leave your home or office for a four-week trial plus free postage and a digital scale without any long-term commitment. Go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and enter the code TWIT. And by IT Pro TV. Now you can look forward to a successful new year where you can get a new career in IT with the best IT education around. Visit itpro.tv/twit for an additional 30% off all consumer subscriptions for the lifetime of your active subscription. Just use the code TWIT30 at checkout. And by Casper. You deserve a fresh start this year. Reset your rest with supremely comfortable mattresses, bedding, and more from Casper. Go to casper.com/twit1 and use the code TWIT1 for $100 off select mattresses. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the week's tech news. It's going to be an interesting show because we have a lot of CES news, but there's other news too. Denise Howell is here. She spent last week in the chat room with us. We're glad we get her on camera this time from This Week in Law. Denise Howell. Info. You are our official Section 230 correspondent.
Yes, the Web's Law Department, as I like to put
it. I like it. The Web's Law Department. It's great to see you, Denise. It's like 85 degrees right now, right?
It's like 85 degrees here, too.
Yeah, I was talking about you.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah. It's 85 degrees.
We're a little more normal, 70 degrees. Yeah. But in fact, Justine's here, too. Hi, Justine. It's great to see you.
I haven't really been outside, so I don't know what the weather's like.
If you were to go outside, you would have to get it. You would start sweating. It's apparently very warm in Southern California.
Yeah. Do you have to walk my dog in a bit?
You'll find out. Nice to see you. Yeah, I'm glad to know you have a dog, and that's not a little place that you curl up in the corner over there.
It depends. It depends on the embargo times. Sometimes I am.
And also, brand new panel member. We're really glad to have the editor-in-chief of Android Police on with us, David Ruddock. Nice to have you, David.
Hey, thanks for having me on the show.
Welcome to the show. We thought it'd be good to have you because not only was CES this week, but Samsung had its own little announcement. There's a lot of phone news, but there's also a lot of news about big tech. In fact, Denise, the radio show today, I had two different people say, I don't want to use an Android phone because I don't want to patronize Google. I don't want to use an Apple phone because I don't want to patronize Apple. They both banned Parler. And I don't want to use Amazon Web Services. And I said, dude, you don't want to use the internet because big tech
Or there's a ton of opportunity, I guess.
Yeah, for somebody.
Yeah. Maybe them.
Both of them mentioned Oracle. Yeah, I don't think the Oracle phone is on the horizon. To be honest, who knows? Yeah, you know, however you feel. I mean, I think it's pretty obvious that Twitter had to do what it did. Facebook had to do what it did. Even Amazon had to do what it did. And Apple and Google are justified in pulling Parler because the rhetoric was getting so heated and the advocacy of violence was so clear that this was the right thing to do. In fact, there was a study, the Washington Post had a story that said ever since Twitter deplatformed the president, fake reports of election fraud have gone down 73%. It turned out it was all him.
Right. And I mean, we could spend all this show talking about what's the right thing to do and what's not the right thing to do and what's the moral thing to do and what who you want to be as a company. But I can tell you that the legal departments of these companies aren't concerned with that. They're concerned with these companies not being on the hook under Section 230 of the Communications Decency
Act. That's interesting.
Does not protect them from the criminal acts of their users.
So Section 230 doesn't go so far as to say if there is a post advocating violence that you are not responsible for it.
Correct. Anything that is a federal crime is not within the safe harbor provided by Section 230. Okay. No federal crimes, no IP violations. You can thank Hollywood for that last one. So, of course, storming the Capitol is a federal crime. Instigating people to storm the Capitol is a federal crime.
Interesting.
Anything involving interstate harm really is a federal crime.
We're kind of rerunning a little bit of last week's episode, but you were in the chat room and you were saying such interesting things, including that I wanted to get you on this week and talk a little bit about that. And some said, well, it may also be that their lawyers warned them, but that the companies involved jumped at the opportunity. You know, they've been waiting for a good reason. I don't know if that's true. In fact, there's reporting that Jack Dorsey had to be talked into it by his team members, that he didn't want to block the president.
Yeah, that rings true to me. I mean, I'm not familiar with Jack. I don't know Jack, but everything I've ever read about him seems to be very, you know, we want Twitter to be a pretty free and open platform, you know, as much as we can be. And then over the years, he's had to back off of that because people have used the platform for pretty awful things. And really what I think you're really cutting to the heart of it, Leo, in that there are a lot of people who feel like, okay, well, I get it that you have to regulate people doing bad things on your platform. But there are a lot of people out there who feel like it's not being policed even-handedly.
Yeah.
And, you know, all I can say to that is that, you know, there can be when you're the president of the United States, it's pretty visible. When you're not, someone has to report it and then it has to be investigated. And then they have to make the pretty draconian call to either suspend your account or knock you off entirely. And they do that on a daily basis, you know, how many hundreds or thousands of times. So
the New York Times kind of backed up in a story from yesterday what you said. Jack Dorsey, Twitter's chief executive, was working remotely on a private island in French Polynesia, frequented by celebrities escaping the paparazzi, when a phone call interrupted him on January 6th. On the line was Vyaha Gadhi, Twitter's top lawyer and safety expert. She said that she and other company executives had decided to lock the president's account temporarily. So Dorsey wasn't even involved in that 12-hour ban. Dorsey was concerned about the move, said two people with knowledge of the call. He had resisted this, obviously, for 4 years, but he had delegated these moderation decisions to Ms. Gadhi. Is that my saying her name right? Do you know, Denise?
I actually don't know.
No. And usually deferred to her. He backed it up later in interviews, but it sounds like, he for years said Twitter is the free speech wing of the free speech party. He did not want to. And I have to say, even the Electronic Frontier Foundation and Cory Doctorow have kind of said, you know, this is maybe not a great precedent. Do we want big tech to rule on these issues, essentially not, you know, unhindered?
Well, the answer to that question opens a whole can of worms, right? Because the reason that And you're more familiar with this than any of us, Leo, that radio and television are treated different than the internet is because years ago, someone decided that the airwaves belong to the public. And
as they do, you have to be licensed to use the public spectrum. That the theory being that's a limited resource owned by the people. So you should have some responsibilities if you're allowed to use it.
Right.
But the internet is not a limited resource, not owned by anybody.
Right. And therein lies the difference. And so are we going to start, if you answer the question, the internet does not belong to the public. It belongs to all the little private nodes that allow us to access the internet. And it's also different from broadcast in that it's, broadcast is very one way, and the internet is very two way. And, are we going to start treating the internet as though it belongs to the public and regulate it similarly to broadcast?
Here's a
big question.
Here's what Corinne McShear. Hold on a second. Let me just give you the EFF thing, and then Justine, I'll give you the floor. This is what Corinne McSherry wrote at EFF. The decisions by Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, and others to suspend and or block President Trump's communications via their platform is a simple exercise of their rights under the First Amendment and Section 230 to curate their sites. We support these rights. Nevertheless, and here's the nevertheless, we are always concerned when platforms take on the role of censors, and this is why they call on them to apply a human rights framework to these decisions. We note those same platforms have chosen for years to privilege some speakers, particularly government officials, over others, not just in the U.S., but in other countries as well. A platform should not apply one set of rules to most of its users, then apply a more permissive set of rules to politicians and world leaders who are already immensely powerful. They should be exactly as judicious about removing content of ordinary users as they have been to date regarding heads of state. So I don't know exactly what they're calling for there. Justine, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, no, I mean, there's so many things to think about. Like, the internet is still sort of new. So we're still kind of navigating these waters. And I mean, we obviously have not had a president that had this much power on social media before, because the internet has just gotten more and more popular. And then, like you were saying, reading through a lot of the responses, everyone's like, this is free speech. Like, our speech is being taken away. I'm like, these are private companies. They have the right to do this. But the fact that normal, regular, everyday people are not the president of the United States, so his one single tweet obviously can create such backlash than someone with maybe like five followers. So, I mean, even if there isn't a preference, it's like, me also as an influencer, like, I kind of have this responsibility that if I say something, people are going to listen, and you have to be careful. So I feel like if there's some sort of clause, like if you are a verified user, then maybe these are specific things that you have to abide by. But it's scary because he really did incite a lot of just insanity throughout this past couple of weeks. And it's kind of still shocking, and I'm still sort of processing it all. So I think everyone else is as well.
No, I agree with you. I think we're all kind of like, What the hell just happened?
And Justine, have you thought about public office? Because it would be nice if our elected representatives all felt that way.
They have a responsibility.
But I was joking also about that. Like, oh my gosh, I'm going to run for office. And it's like, a lot of these people growing up now, they have their entire lives are online. So you know their entire history. But it's like a lot of these, I don't know how to explain it, but it's like most younger people today, like, they're not going to want to run for office after seeing like what people are going through.
So I worry about how do you kind of bring
those new people in that have these new ideas if this is the way people are being treated?
I reject completely the idea that the president has been silenced in any significant way. He can walk down to the briefing room at any time and get national coverage by all television networks. He's the president. And nor have conservatives. Most talk radio in the United States is conservative. As far as I know, Rush Limbaugh still broadcasts 5 days a week.
He had whitehouse.gov for 4 years.
Yeah. Yeah. Why didn't he put messages there?
Why not?
I mean, he just liked Twitter.
The administration used that fairly effectively.
Right. So I don't think he's been deplatformed in a significant way. But at the same, and I do think this isn't a First Amendment issue. A lot of people say, what about the Bill of Rights? These are private companies. They're not prevented from doing this by the First Amendment. I don't know.
I think that's something that you need to stress, because a lot of people don't understand that at all.
Yeah.
Yes. Allow the lawyer on the show to reiterate that. The First Amendment only applies to government actions. Courts are in accord about this. Private companies have a very, very limited responsibility under the First Amendment. If they have something that has, you know how when you go to the shopping center and there's somebody there with a table who wants to harass you and give you literature?
Yeah.
That they're there because there's a case out there, or it's really more of a state by state issue than under federal law. But a public forum can be created on private real estate, such that if you own a shopping center or a park or somewhere else where the public congregates, you might have to set aside a little free speech zone where, right. And again, you have to, you know, allow whoever wants to use it to use it.
You remember going to the airport and you'd be harassed by Hare Krishnas as you walk through the airport? Do you remember that? But then they made free speech booths and they have to be there because that's private space, right? So they're allowed to say, no, you can't wander around harassing people. You have to stand behind this booth, which, which so by the way, is empty most of the time now because it's no good. Nobody ever just walks right by it.
And we can't travel.
Yeah, and we can't go to the airport anyway.
And totally real world, real property related exception.
Right.
Private companies aren't bound by the First Amendment. It's a purely a government thing. That's why when Trump was using Twitter and blocking people from following his Twitter account, a court stepped in and said, I'm sorry, you've created a public forum as a public official using an internet service. And he's not the only one. There certainly have been many, many, many other public officials who've run into this too, that when they decide to use social media as a way to interact with the public, bingo, that triggers the First Amendment. But as far as what the private platforms can do, that's a completely different question.
So let me bring up the larger issue. This is the issue that came up at the radio show. So there is concern that big tech has an awful lot of power, that, you know, nobody can say no to Mark Zuckerberg. Even his board of directors can't, because he has the majority of voting stock in Facebook. He's not elected. He's a private person. And yet he controls a platform with more than 2.5 billion people that has already, we know, has immense power. And that seems like an awful lot of power. David, I had a guy call me and say, I want a tablet, but I don't want Android or iOS. I said, I think you're out of luck. You know, I mean, even Fire tablets are Android under the hood.
Yeah, I mean, these companies are inescapable anymore. There really is no alternative, you know, and we've seen what happens when you try to create alternatives. You know, usually what ends up happening is the alternative was created for a very specific reason. You know, if you have a parlor situation and the alternative ends up being host to everything you wanted to stop in the first place. So, you know, meanwhile, regular people are very content to use these platforms. And, you know, even if they may not trust them very much, you know, it's still where they congregate naturally just because of critical mass. I mean, the same thing is true of, you know, software platforms as far as operating systems and things like that go too. So, yeah, I mean, I think there is the kind of the inertia argument that Facebook and Twitter and these companies are so large that they exert power that no other company realistically could gain at this point. For them to lose that power would be a truly incredible event. So I think that brings up those big, difficult questions about regulation and about what people are doing on these platforms and the responsibility the companies have toward, you know, customers, towards governments, toward their partners. And I think that, you know, we're not finding a lot of good answers at this point. We're finding a lot of polarization.
And there is nowhere to go that isn't run by big tech. I mean, there is literal. I mean, I said, well, you could get a Pine phone that runs Linux. It's not very usable. You could get a Librem, you know, Purism Librem laptop that runs Linux, and, you know, as kind of they've taken the Intel management engine out, and you could do that. But the things that people think of as the internet and think of as technology are really dominated by those big five tech companies. It'd be very hard to get away from them. In fact, who is the New York Times reporter who tried to do that? I can't remember her name, but it did not go well. she actually turned off Amazon and her router. She said nothing from AWS, and there was nowhere to go. Was it Cashmere Hill? Yeah, I think it was. There was nowhere to go. She's like, it was not a good experience. Mike Masnick and Techter wrote that rather than saying these guys have been deplatformed, that Parler, which is practically out of business, this is the free market responding to Parler. That's an interesting point of view. These are free market companies deciding it's not worth the trouble to host them, so we're just going to kick them off.
And the liability.
And the liability,
And I'm completely behind Mike on that.
Yeah.
Scary.
Yeah. He says any business has to build relationships with other businesses to survive. And if no other businesses want to work with you, guess what? You might go out of business. That's the the market.
You touched, Leo, on the other thing that could happen here and that government is sort of slowly doing here and in the EU and maybe even elsewhere in the world. And that is saying that these companies are too big and starting to look at them from an antitrust standpoint. But as you've been pointing out, it's not a Ma Bell situation. It's not one company that has all the internet, right? It's several of them, and they're not working together on these kinds of issues. Although I'm sure there are people that would who have theories about them working together. I don't know that any of that could be proven or demonstrated. But you know, to say that Amazon is the only way to host material on the web is just inaccurate.
Right. In fact, Oracle copied AWS's API, something they sued Google over. So if you want to move, you could just go to Oracle instead. And apparently, at least those callers who called the radio show both brought up Oracle as being a place to go. Anyway, I don't want to get – it's a political subject, and it's a tinderbox, and I don't want to stir up any anxiety in our audience or among you guys, but it's still going on. It's still an issue. And I think it's difficult because I think big tech is awfully powerful, and I don't know if we want them to be that powerful. It's almost impossible to avoid them. Denise, speaking of the EU, both Angela Merkel of Germany and Macron of France said, oh, how could they let that happen in the U.S.? Here, the government would decide, which...
I think they're far closer philosophically and from a policy standpoint to both deciding that antitrust laws apply and that the public owns the internet.
Interesting. Yeah. But I think I interpret it more that they don't have a First Amendment there. They don't have a rule that says government can't abridge speech. And in fact, Germany does. You can't sell Nazi memorabilia on eBay in Germany because it's against the law. So Germany is perfectly comfortable abridging speech if it serves social interests. We here, we really love our First Amendment. But that's one of the reasons this is challenging. This is tricky. I don't know what the answer is. Anyway, I know.
We knew.
I wish we knew.
Right. And I think that the reason that you're not going to find Nazi memorabilia, I mean, maybe you do on eBay. I've not searched.
I think you can everywhere but
it's
Germany.
It's banned from, it, from being sold on eBay in the U.S. too. And that's not a First Amendment thing. That's a policy thing that the company decided.
Yeah. Which, and again, fully within their rights to do so.
Yeah.
All right. All right, let's jump right back into the nice warm bath that is big tech. Put these concerns aside. We're going to talk about CES because, David, you covered it. You went to all the events. Justine actually hosted CES 2021, the digital experience. So we're going to talk about that in just a little bit. It's really nice to have David Ruddock, EIC of Android Police. First time on the show. Won't be your last. Thank you for being here. What is RDRV3? Oh, that's your initials.
It is my initials.
R. David Ruddock.
Yep.
Got it. Are you the third?
I am, unfortunately. Aww.
Isn't that sweet?
That's so great.
Yeah.
I'd be like the fifth, but for some reason my dad decided not to use his middle name when he named me. So I'm just the only one. Is it better to be the third or better not to be?
I think not to be makes, credit applications and mail.
That's a good point.
Difficult at times.
Yeah, that's a good point. Although every contact list application I use tries to merge me and my father together because we have the same first and last name, even though we don't have the same middle name every time. No, that's not me. That's my dad. Justine Azarek is here. Justine, superstar. When Jason suggested, let's get Justine for the show. Actually, I think Lisa suggested. I said, she'll never be on the show. She's way too big now.
This is like so exciting for me. I mean, this is, you gave me like my first kind of like platform to even use my voice. So I'm always very grateful for that. So thank you.
I'll never forget that Mac Break Weekly. We were at the Brew Pub, right? The 21st Amendment or something like that.
Yeah. It was like right when Twitter was kind of sort of becoming popular.
Yeah. And I sat down at the table, we were going to do the show, and there was this beautiful young woman sitting there on her phone. I thought, well, shit, we're going to have to get her to move. And it turned out to be you. So
like, she needs to go.
I platformed you. Somebody said I platformed Digesty. No, I take no credit. Cause before that you were on Justin.tv, which is now after many generations, Twitch, but yeah, you were, I remember Justin was crazy enough. He had a camera on him and he was always on, and you did it. And then you did it.
Well, I was like, this is so cool. Your name's Justin. I'm Justine. And you're doing what I would like to do. So, you know, he also gave me that opportunity to do that. And it's just really kind of shocking to sort of see where that all came.
How long did you do that? How long did you do
that? I did it for about 6 months.
And was like, why were they watching you while you were sleeping?
Yeah. I mean, the lights were out so you couldn't actually see anything. But I mean, it was pretty much 24/7. I had it connected to like a laptop. And now that's so common because people just go around filming and going live on their phones. But I mean, I had like a laptop. Like, these kids just don't know how great they have it these days.
Yeah, Justin had a backpack. I think he had a backpack.
Oh, he had the funniest thing. He had like a camera on his hat.
He had a camera on his hat. It was crazy. Yeah. That was, gosh, that feels like the very early days. That feels like so long ago.
It was. I mean, that was 2007.
It's not that long ago, okay? It just feels like it.
But in internet time, I feel like, you know, we're talking about all of this and like these policies. It's like no one really expected Twitter to be what it is today. No so idea. It's like these things have to just be put in place quickly and we're kind of all figuring it out as we go.
The first time I left Twitter was in 2007, early 2007, because I thought that's confusing. Their name is so much like Twit. I don't like it. So I left, and it was you at CES that convinced me, oh, no, you got to be on Twitter. Everybody's on Twitter. So you got me back on Twitter in April 2007, I think.
Then you left again.
And then I left and I came back and now I'm gone one more time. It's one of those, it's an abusive relationship. I keep going back to it. I can't stop. Denise Howell and I go back a little bit too. Host for a long time of This Week in Law. We miss you on that show, Denise Howell.
I miss doing the show, but it's so nice that you bring me back. I'm always so happy to
you're
back and do anything with Twitter.
Yeah, you're a part of the family. I mean, I felt bad we had to cancel the show. We've canceled more since then. We're slowly whittling away to nothing in the COVID era. But at least we still do this show, you know? It's all right. This is, to everything there is a season. And, you know, Justine now, massive star. Look at the YouTube stars. That's the future. That's where.
No, I think the TikTok stars, that's where it's at.
I know. You feel now you understand how I feel because you looking at TikTok, but you're doing TikTok, right?
I'm still doing TikTok. Yeah. I mean, I go through phases too, but I feel like TikTok for me, sort of at the beginning of the pandemic, kind of reminded me why I started making content because it was fun. You didn't, I wasn't putting thought into it. I was just doing it because I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And I think I have to sometimes have that reminder, even with YouTube, when you have those downfalls, you're like, why am I even doing this? Am I enjoying this? And you just kind of have to remember, why did I start doing this? And then, you know, You do slowly remember.
Well, that's the truth. I mean, I take no credit for your success, obviously, because you just are one of the hardest working people and you're brilliant and you do a great job. And so you're completely self-made. I don't want anybody to think have any sense of having contributed to that. I'm just, you know, you work hard. And I know how hard it is to do what you do. How many videos a day are you doing? You have to work all the time, right?
It's pretty much, nonstop. And then during the pandemic, my sister and I decided to start a podcast. So that has taken way more time than I thought because we still are both editing it ourselves, uploading into thumbnails, produce it. Yeah, it's, I just don't know why I don't hire a team. Like, I think I just really love the process of creating so much that I don't know.
You don't have a team?
I have one other editor and shooter. That's it. I still edit half my videos. My sister, we take turns editing podcasts. Yeah, I would probably get a lot more done if I had more people.
Well, I see the Mac Pro over your right shoulder, so I know you have help. That's pretty nice.
That's mine. Well, I'm on my PC. This is my streaming setup.
Yeah.
So that's my edit station.
Wait a minute. You don't use a Windows machine to stream.
I do, yeah.
Really?
For gaming. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I've got this gaming. Whole PC set up here, and then the Mac is in the back.
So this is your Twitch. This is like, do you do Twitch too?
I do. Yeah, I started also streaming again. Jeez. And it kind of really also took me back to like the beginning days of,
of
everything. And yeah. just sort of like connecting with people at a time where you're not able to really connect with anyone was really fun for me and both the audiences as well.
I'm with you. I always want to go back to those early days where it was easy, simple, and fun. It was just, you know, communicating. That always is
right.
the most fun.
Are you guys noticing that the new media out there seem to demand more production values than...
You can blame Marques Brownlee for that.
He's like, I got to do 8K all the time.
Yeah. I just want to shake him and say, come on, man, 720p is where it's at.
He started in 720p. He's been doing this for just as long as I have, too. And it's so cool because he still edits and shoots a lot of his stuff himself, too. So it's kind of like we both have that kind of same mindset.
Oh, come on. Marques keeps hiring people. He just put an ad on Twitter saying I need more people. He's got a team.
Can I take some of those extras that you're done with?
He's got a team.
He still edits a lot of his videos.
Does he? Good for him.
Yep.
Because that's the fun, making it.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm thrilled to have all three of you here. I feel like that moment on Jeopardy. It's the worst part of Jeopardy when Alex Trebek would go and talk to the contestants. I always skip through that part. Now I feel guilty. I have to go back and rewatch. We just did our little Jeopardy moment. We'll get back to our game and Double Jeopardy in just a bit. Our show today brought to you by stamps.com. I think we can all agree one thing we learned in 2020 is the internet is pretty awesome. Maybe even more awesome than we thought. Groceries online, movies online, doctor visits online, and of course, post office online, thanks to stamps.com. Stamps.com has saved us. We've been a stamps.com customer for a decade. They have saved us so much time. Debbie doesn't have to get up and go to the post office to buy stamps. She can print them from our computers, our printer. You don't need a postage meter or anything. She also saves us a lot of money. We get discounts from stamps.com you can't even get at the post office. Stamps.com allows businesses to do all their mailing, all their shipping right from their computer without leaving your home or your office or your home office or your desk. You get the services of the Postal Service, but now stamps.com also does UPS. So if you're an Amazon or an eBay or an Etsy seller, if you're shipping stuff, if you're sending out invoices or brochures, you gotta have stamps.com. Amazing discounts, 5 cents off every first class stamp, up to 40% off priority mail, up to 62% off UPS shipping rates. Whether you're a small office sending out invoices, an online seller shipping out orders, even a giant warehouse sending out thousands of packages a day, stamps.com can handle it all with ease. Official U.S. postage 24/7, any letter, any package, any class of mail, anywhere you want to send it. And of course, I love this, the Postal Service, they'll come to your door and pick it up, or you just drop it off in a mailbox near you. It's as easy as could be. No wonder 900,000 small businesses use stamps.com. Stamps.com has been a partner of this show since 2012. If you haven't tried them yet, I don't know why. What are you waiting for? Make 2021 the year you stop wasting time going to the post office. Go to stamps.com, enter the promo code there, and it's TWIT. Click submit, and you're going to get an amazing offer, including a ton of free postage, a USB scale. You get 4 weeks of stamps.com, no risk, cancel at any time, no long-term commitments, no contracts. But I have a feeling after those 4 weeks, you're going to say, yeah, we're never giving this up. That's what we said. Stamps.com. Click the top of the homepage, type in TWIT, stamps.com. Never go to the post office again. Not that the post office isn't great. I love the post office. But with stamps.com, you can do it all from your desk. Stamps.com. Thank you, Stamps, for supporting the show. And thank you for supporting the show by using that offer code TWIT. That's really important to us. So please don't forget. So this year, CES was not in Vegas. In fact, Justine, you and Rich DeMuro had to go to Redmond to do CES.
Yeah. So Naomi Kyle and Brian Tong were the second set of hosts. So they had two separate kind of sections, like completely different productions. So we were the morning shift. And they took the afternoon. So we were talking about this earlier, but my call time was like 1 a.m.
Oh,
so I had to make midnight, We did rehearsals at 3 a.m. and went live at 4. So it was, honestly, I've done overnight shoots before, but this was something that I've never experienced. I was going to bed at 4 p.m.
So you would introduce the keynote speaker is here and you would set that up I didn't do any of it. I feel bad. I went to CES in last year and it was a lot of fun in Vegas, but I just couldn't bring myself to sit and watch video all day. So I didn't do any of it.
So they have, it's on demand until the, my dog is.
You can go back and watch it. That's okay.
Yeah. So it's there until February 15th, okay. But it was cool because we were kind of the interstitial kind of bringing together.
And you were live.
It was live. Yes.
Fun. What a great gig. So instead, it was a little smaller. Instead of 4,500 booths, there were 1,900 exhibitors. Nobody had to walk the show floor. Here you are in the Wall Street Journal. You did this show from the Microsoft studios. They have some very nice studios.
Redmond, they have this crazy, just the set was amazing. And obviously my biggest concern was obviously COVID because I have done basically nothing for the past year except work out of my house. And so it was great because everything felt very safe. It was very distanced. They had different routes that you could take. You know, I had a specific room to go, like even catering. Like I had got so many questions about like, what was this like? How did it go? Because that's also going to be the new normal as far as production goes.
I
don't think it'll ever go back to 100% the way that it used to be.
I have to say watching, for instance, Apple's WWC and their keynotes, the three events that they did at the end of the year, it really was so much better. You miss the in-person, I guess. You miss the demo room. But it's a much better way to consume the information. And I think from Apple's point of view, it's a much more successful way to deliver it as well. It's there in a lot more control.
Yeah, and for people being able to cover it, like we don't have to travel. We're here. We get the products. And then, I mean, you might have less turnaround time, but at least we're here and ready to work. So I do miss the in-person, but I think this past year has taught us that there's a lot of unnecessary travel that really did not need to happen. There are better ways that we could do things.
You agree, David? Is this the future for trade shows?
Virtual? I go back and forth on this a lot. In the past, year or so, I think we've kind of watched the way, various companies and industries have responded to this. And some of them have been much more aggressive in pursuing the digital event strategy. And some have really just kind of turned back the tap and really made announcements feel a lot like a lot lighter touch, I would say.
Yeah. A good example, David, the Google event this year.
Yeah.
It was so sleepy, you know?
Very much so. And I think that you see companies, of two minds about this. I think Google has been very sensitive about not wanting to look like they're tone deaf, I guess you would say, while the pandemic's ongoing. But other companies have really, I think I've seen more stumbles than I have successes, quite honestly. I think the engagement at a lot of these events is quite terrible, to be honest. I know for a fact that I tune out of most of them.
Yeah, that's why I didn't watch. Yep.
Yeah. And that's the reason nobody watches. I think that's, in terms of journalists and brands, how they connect, this has been an unmitigated disaster for the last year. I really think most people have suffered for it and nobody's really, you've gained more time to do more things, but it's come at the expense of kind of that hype and excitement and kind of the collective energy that these in-person events bring. I am not the kind of person who is going to, say that I get crazy excited about smartphone events. That's not really true, but I understand that they bring that energy and that mass of people together in a way that is far more effective in amplifying a brand's message than these digital events, which I've just seen failure after failure after failure. It's causing journalists, especially, just kind of to go through the motions when they announce news. They get everything ahead of time. They've got their product images. They've got all their virtual assets, and they've got their copy done. They file the story and they move on. There is not that deeper engagement that you tend to get at a show like CES, where you're able to kind of wander to the corner of the show floor and be like, "Well, there's something really weird over here, and I want to talk to the people who made it for 15 minutes." There was just, to me, there was no real effective outreach from the show this year in that regard. But we've seen that from every event, in my opinion, since COVID began. It's been a real uphill battle. And I think that most companies, from brands that I've talked to, there is a desire to get back out there and do events again. I don't think most of them are substantially turned off of it from a cost or attention standpoint. I think they're ready to get going again.
There is a huge difference in cost You don't have to fly people out, put them up in a hotel. You don't have to have a $100,000 booth. It's a lot cheaper for companies to do this. But if they don't get the bang for their lesser buck, then maybe there is an incentive for them to want to do it. Justine, you were at, you must have been at Steve Jobs' iPhone announcement, which is 13 years ago last week.
Mm-hmm.
That was, there was an energy, there was an excitement there. Partly because we didn't know what he was going to say.
Yeah, I mean, you can't replace that feeling. But also, I mean, for me, like, you know, being able to be at home, be in my element, have the product, you know, I guess like some journalists, like you don't actually have to like sit down and like record videos and stuff like that. Right. So there is, I feel like there is a little bit of a difference, whereas I can actually have time with it before I actually make the video. And so I think it really depends on the different types of people that are doing this stuff. But I mean, you will never be able to replace just being able to go and see your friends and other fellow coworkers and just enjoy the products, because there is that feeling, like David was saying, that you just can't replace that.
David, what about the Samsung event this week? They announced the Samsung Galaxy S21. It was a lie. I didn't watch it. Jason did it with Florence Ion because it was 7 a.m. Thursday and I didn't want to get up. Was it live? Did it give it a little bit of buzz? Samsung's never done great events, but.
No, honestly, I did not watch the press conference.
Okay,
we'd been briefed
go.
Ahead of time, and that is kind of the behavior this engenders in people.
Yeah. Part of it is not, and nowadays, even Apple's having a hard time keeping a lid on its announcements. And, you know, Apple, that was the difference. We still were, as we filed in that day in 2007 at the Macworld Expo, we didn't know if there was an iPhone. We didn't know what it would be called. We knew nothing about it. Those days are long gone. You kind of
everything about everything.
Yeah.
So it's like if there's some small little secret, then we're all shocked. I mean, I actually do have the Samsung phones here right now.
Do you like it? Oh, look at that. Look at all the things. Look at all the pet cameras on the back.
There are so many cameras.
Cookie.
Like it's really shocking. And then the S21 is also very pretty. Like the colors are nice. But it's hard because there's, you know, very small upgrades from every phone. So it's like, how do you kind of do a review where I'm just like, okay, here's a couple extra specs. I just made this video last year. So I think that's
the same video. You could just reuse it.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people were all kind of struggling with that. Like, how do we make this a more engaging video? And now I can't leave the house. So I can't really go and do things. So it's just going to be, I feel like we thought that 2020 was over, but I think 2021 is just a little bit different than 2020.
Part two. 2020.
Can I drop a note of optimism into
the
discussion?
Please, Denise.
I think what we're missing at these kinds of events when they all go virtual is that lobby con factor where, you know, it's you go and there are some speakers and panels and things that you definitely really want to see. And then the rest of it is just meeting the people that are there and the serendipity of whether they are going to, you know, coincide with something you're working on and how you can collaborate together and make it all better. But the note of optimism I was going to inject is my dad and stepmom got vaccinated this morning.
Yay!
That is, you know, that's
is that because of their age?
Yes, they're everyone. I think in California now, county by county, you know, each county is now charged with getting its residents vaccinated. And I think that's true nationwide.
And I think if you're over 65 now, you can get, which means I missed it by this much.
And if you're over 75, you're even better off.
Yeah,
you're going to get
exactly.
bumped to the line even
nice.
More quickly. So that they live in Mendocino County and they got vaccinated this morning. So.
Oh, nice. They're just up the road a bit.
That's amazing.
And what are they going to do about their second dose? Because there's some concern now that it turns out there is no reserve.
They told me that they are already scheduled for their second dose and that no one they spoke with as they got vaccinated this morning was concerned that it wouldn't be available.
Okay. They're just making it
were
as
all
fast
just
as
like,
they can.
Come on in. You're coming in on Valentine's Day and you're going to get vaccinated again.
Good. Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
I have to say, David, though, you did kind of nail the difference, which is that buzz. Even if you don't go to CES, you know that once a year in January, there's going to be this kind of industry-wide excitement about new stuff. And no big company has announced anything really important at CES in a long time. Microsoft stopped going, Apple stopped going. You know, it's, but there's just this energy that you miss, I guess.
Yeah. And I think that it's, you know, for the smaller companies especially, and I speak as a journalist, but I also attend CES in a business capacity with our sales team. And you just can't replicate that virtually. It's impossible. And people, you know, when you talk, you know, to people in the media about CES, all about, oh, what new products were announced, you know, how much news is coming out. And that's fine and good. And it's a big part of the show. But the bigger part of the show is really, you know, commerce. It's finance going on here. You know, money is changing hands. People are committing to buy things. People are making deals. And when you don't have the physical show, that becomes just an order of magnitude more difficult to do. And I think that's why you saw the vendor participation rate just go through the floor this year.
Yeah.
Because they all knew we're not going to make any money. We're not going to score any deals. You know, we can't get out there and network. And that makes the show necessarily more, you know, more challenging. And I think we saw that with product announcements that most companies, I think, especially the smaller ones, decided to pull back. I think they saw this as an opportunity to push roadmaps back maybe a quarter or two. Yep. You know, maybe they had to anyway. And I think they took that chance with CES this year.
I mean, the other point to be made is they may have been done. It's even if CES had been in person and real and the same as before, people, I think if you're a retailer, you're not anxious to start stocking up. You don't know what's going to happen. And so I think that there is this pall over the economy. I know it's not showing up in the stock market, but there is this pall as businesses go under. There's when's consumer spending going to come back? No one knows. And yeah, the vaccines, but no one knows. And I think there's this, I would guess there's this general sense among the buyers and the makers that, well, let's wait a little bit before we make any commitments. Is that right, David? Is that what you're saying?
I think so. I think, you know, I mean, it's very well understood. Uncertainty is a hugely powerful economic force. And I think that you see that play out across the industry. We saw, you know, like there was still a fair number of products announced, but I think you saw, you know, and this is another article that was kind of on the sheet that I did read because it was by my, you know, good online acquaintance, Kevin Toefel, over at Stacey on IoT.
Piece. Yes.
Yeah. And I totally agree with him. I think that everybody's taking a step back and saying, we've got an opportunity to reevaluate what the product roadmap and what our goals are in light of everything that's changed in the past year. And I think they're taking that opportunity.
Yeah, Kevin said that the home automation business was taking this as an opportunity to kind of take a breather. There weren't a lot of announcements. A deep breath, he said, for the smart home to determine its future. It's funny because
other home things seemed to be quite prevalent as you read through those best of articles.
Well, there's a list.
The bathtub and the toilet and various ways you can work out at home.
Yeah, that's true. A lot of.
Well, I was not actually that surprised about how many different like air purifiers, which is funny because all of the things that I would have skipped in previous CESs, those are the things that I would have been checking out. All of the new face masks, those humidifier purifiers, that's the top tech that we're into now.
It's kind of funny. Yeah. Or the exercise at home. How many different mirrors are there now? Yeah.
There's a lot.
Yeah. It's really interesting. And yet, who knows? A year from now, and this is the problem, as you said, it's uncertainty, David. A year from now, it could be the roaring 20s. It could be, you know, bathtub gin and dancing on the streets, or it could be, we don't know, somber and quiet and, the you know, bring out your dead. We just don't know what it's going to be like.
So we were all making sourdough and now we're going to make gin?
Yeah. Bathtub gin, it's the new. Actually, it's so funny because I did the sourdough thing, and I about 6 months ago I said I'm getting so fat. I put the sourdough in the freezer, and just the other day Lisa said, "Whatever happened to that sourdough?" And so I brought the I started it up again. So I'm back in the sourdough train.
I started growing lettuce.
Yeah, I want to do that. Do you have a hydroponic system?
It's AeroGarden. They have like small ones and they're so easy. You just put the pods in and now I'm like, this is great. I started growing herbs and lettuce. I was like, who am I? Like, what is happening?
That is awesome. It's so funny that you say that because we want to do that. But I want to actually build like a greenhouse. I want to make so much lettuce that I don't have to go to the grocery store anymore.
It grows very quickly. I have like a 24 pod and I'm just like, I don't actually know what to do with all this lettuce. Like I eat a lot of salads, but this is excessive. So it grows very quickly.
I have a box with dirt and also find that that grows quickly.
Yes.
We have way more lettuce than we need.
Yes. Good. Yes. Well, I'll grow fewer lettuces and more zucchinis. You never can have too much zucchini, right? Yes. In fact, there is a holiday. I don't remember the date. It's called Put a Zucchini on Your Neighbor's Porch Day.
I've never heard that.
It's a zero-sum game, though, because if they put it's national, August 8th, National Sneak Some Zucchini Onto Your Neighbor's Porch Day. It's a zero-sum game, though, because if they put a zucchini on your porch, you're going to get the zucchini back. So it's not...
I feel like that's something that could get you banned from Amazon Web Services.
Rightly so. Rightly so. Just to give credit where credit's due, is the brainchild of a guy named Thomas Roy, who also invented National No Socks Day and Humbug Day. Just so you know. Sneak some.
How do we make it? Do you just like say, like declare? Like I declare this a holiday? Is that how this works? Yes,
I don't know. There might be a commission like the, the folks who approve emojis. You know, I don't know. There might be some sort of, I don't know. This is the national day calendar that has all the national days. See, right here. You click this button and you register a national day. It's just that easy. I think this should be National Justine Day. Justine Day.
What's today? 17? All right.
You got to pick carefully. You don't want to have a collision with existing national. Should we see what day it is? I bet it's something. What is this? 17th?
Curious.
Let's see. Do you want to do national days, weeks, months, or internet? Let's do national days. January 17th.
Hangover day.
Is it? It's National Bootleggers Day. And National Hot Buttered Rum Day. I guess tomorrow will be National Hangover Day. National Bootleggers Day recognizes... This was created by Templeton Rye Whiskey. Well, I think we've all learned something here today.
I wasn't aware there was a hot buttered rum lobby.
Oh, apparently. And don't mess with them either, because they're serious. Do you like the S21? Let's start with you first, David, then I'll ask Justine. What do you think?
I think that, I have the same phones. Justine does, the S21 and S21 Ultra. And I think the overall sentiment, from everyone I've spoken to and from myself at this point, is they're very iterative phones. They don't really change a lot. So, you have the latest internals from Qualcomm here in the United States, if that's where you're buying the phone.
Is that the 888? What are they putting in these?
Yes, it is the Snapdragon 888.
Okay. Which is a lucky number in China. So
yes, I think that is, they say that's not why they made it that.
Yeah,
sure. They're lying. I think that, Samsung remains the de facto choice for smartphones just because, overall in terms of component quality and availability and just relationships with carriers here in America, especially, it still ends up being the default for most people just because, either it's the most aggressively priced with discounts or, they're kind of Samsung lifers and they keep upgrading within the brand. And I think
let's be fair, advertise like crazy.
Yes, of course. They advertise an insane amount. So I think that those people who, have been inside this, been with the Samsung smartphone family for years now, they're going to like it. I think they'll like it better than they did the phones last year because they fixed kind of the autofocus issue the S21 Ultra had with the camera. But overall, in terms of things you're going to notice that are an upgrade, there's a 10x optical zoom lens, which I think is really cool. But I like to take, artsy and more landscapey photos. And that lens is great for that because it lets you get closer. And to me, that is the best thing a camera can do is let you get closer to something. But I think for the average person, maybe that lens isn't quite as useful. And, when you're at 10x optical zoom, if your hands shake, the effect is a little outsized on the viewfinder versus holding a, full-size DSLR with a telephoto that you're able to steady. So it's not always a practical solution. But the phone itself, it's so iterative that I would just say if you go play with a Galaxy S20 Ultra, you will have the same basic experience you have with this phone. There are so few substantial changes as far as the, you know, ordinary consumer would be concerned. The only one that they would notice is that it's cheaper.
A big difference. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's $200 cheaper.
Exactly. And the way they achieve that on the Ultra, in my mind, is Samsung's just eating more margin. I don't think there's really anything to it other than that. Maybe Qualcomm lowered the price for the Snapdragon 888. The other two, you know, the baby S21, you know, is a plastic back, which I don't think anybody really needs to be concerned about. And I think, you know, it represents the best value in the family. But overall, there's nothing surprising here. I think that Samsung, you know, played it safe, and probably they plan to play it safe before COVID happened. I'm not convinced that a lot of decisions with regard to these phones are related to economic changes apart from the price drops.
A year ago, probably after the release of the S20, they started planning the S21. So
yeah,
wouldn't be a surprise. They did. It sounds like they're going to kill the Note, right? They're going to replace. They're putting the S Pen on the. The S series.
They're dancing around that. The statements they put out have been, you know, initially, you know, it sounded like an executive said, oh, the Note's going away. And then another statement came out and they said, oh, well, we don't exactly mean that. And so I'm not sure what that means. And I don't know that we've had any good leaks about this just yet. I suspect that what we could see is a more kind of down market Note smartphone that comes out, more similar to the base Note 20 last year. And maybe we don't see the ultra high end Note again, but I could be wrong there too. It could be possible Samsung is just going to continue for now business as usual. But yeah, the way the wind's blowing, definitely the Note line is slowly being, you know, pushed out of existence is redundant.
There was some upset about the lack of micro SD card. Do you see that as an issue or?
I think it's an issue for people who comment on the internet mostly.
Yes.
it's not really an ordinary consumer problem. And honestly, the situation with SD cards on Android, they're treated like such second-class citizens that they're really not useful for anything but bulk media storage.
Right.
And that's really all anybody's using them for anymore. And with 128 gigs of storage on the phone out of the box at the bare minimum, to me, you're catering to a crowd that, you know, has had this thing for a decade and they really, really don't want to let it go, but you're not really advancing any more utility to the phone by
right.
keeping it there. And you are making some sacrifices, you know, when you're talking about 10 or 20 extra milliamp hours in the battery you can squeeze in there.
That's,
you know, phone
difference.
Makers start making those decisions.
Yeah. They did take out the one thing I really thought was cool with Samsung Pay. You could use it on a MagStripe terminal because they had this MST technology. And I always enjoyed, oh, we don't take Apple Pay. And I said, well, wait a minute. And I just would swipe my Samsung phone and they go, oh, how did you do that? I always enjoyed that. But I guess that's probably the time has come to get rid of MST as well.
Yeah. The anecdote I heard about the MST was kind of interesting is that in Mexico, actually, Samsung phones are very popular because of
the
MST technology.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because even though in Mexico they're supposed to have contactless and EMV, a lot of shops apparently still don't use it. They just disable it or they use an old reader. So that's kind of a bummer, obviously, for people in Mexico who, you know, use and buy Samsung phones. Here in America, though, I feel like we've seen the pandemic rapidly accelerate the contactless payment movement.
Yeah. Yeah. And let's see there. Oh, finally, supposedly this new ultrasonic fingerprint sensor is better than the old one. Is it the same? It's new, isn't it?
So this is Qualcomm's second generation ultrasonic fingerprint scanner, which I can probably
through the screen scanner. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a through the screen scanner. So the way Qualcomm's works as opposed to the other side, there are basically two types. You have optical and you have ultrasonic. And Qualcomm's is ultrasonic, which uses basically a ultrasonic pulse that a little controller sends out and that reads your fingerprints. So this year's scanner is 70% larger than the one that they used last year
and
the year before.
So you don't have to be so accurate.
Yeah, they also claim it's faster. I don't really believe them on that. It feels almost exactly the same. But the larger scanning area does help because that really is,
sure.
You know, it makes it easier to kind of fat finger it.
Yeah, that might make it faster. Yeah, because you don't have to aim. Justine, one of the things they pushed and they were very excited about was all the video production capabilities. I know you're an iPhone person in your heart of hearts.
I mean, I am. It's like the iPhone obviously works so well with like the Apple ecosystem, but obviously I do have a PC. And so I kind of have this whole other, you know, separate Windows life. So being able to have the Android phone, and I do miss the SD card because I'm that bulk storage person who I'm transferring all of my footage. I save everything onto the SD card and then take that out. And then I copy it like to my Mac if I'm editing there. Perfect. But now with cloud storage and 5G becoming a little bit more available in places, we're going to be storing things in the cloud and being able to retrieve it faster. So I do understand that they're kind of pushing that. And if, like David said too, like if you're able to get extra battery life, like that's also very important. And I think most people aren't really using the SD cards like, you know, someone who's a content creator would be.
Would you consider, would you ever shoot on a S21 for some of your videos or?
I do. Yeah. And I mean, 8K is okay. It's 8K, but without, you know, the sensor of a RED or the, a prime lens, like you're not going to be getting like this true, incredible cinematic 8K quality. But what I did like is they said that you can take a 33 megapixel kind of screenshot if you are filming in 8K. So you can still take like a still photo from it. So you're still able to kind of do that, which is cool. But I have done a couple vlogs just on the S20 and I think it's great. It's just the audio is usually where it gets me. It's because usually the iPhone does have better microphones.
Mm-hmm. You don't use a third-party external microphone when you shoot with your camera or your phone.
I mean, if I'm shooting on my phone, that's the point. Is I just want to like I don't want to have a whole entire rig. If I did, I would just use my actual camera.
Right. Does it do Dolby Vision or no? I know the iPhone does.
I don't think it does actually. But what is what's cool is they do have like this little director view. So on the iPhone, I think it was maybe a year or 2 years ago, they had the dual recording. So you can actually do that now on here too. They're calling it the vlogger view.
Of course. It's for you. They designed it for you, iJustine.
They try to throw in those content creator things. And obviously they have some upgraded, it has the laser autofocus as well, that sensor. So that's supposed to help with doing better portrait mode photos. Or I guess they don't call them, it's the live focus, not the portrait mode.
It's so confusing. I know. We got director's view. We got night mode. Do you shoot with RED? Do you have RED cameras, don't you?
I don't have one, but I've rented some before. I love shooting with those. But the thing that I do like that they did with the camera bump is they embraced it. Like it's actually all one with like the outside
it's
of it.
So giant.
Good. Oh, and then during their Unpacked event, they're talking about trying to create the perfect black color. And I'm not going to lie, like it's pretty great. And it's very
one darker. It's blacker than black. It's the blackest.
But it was kind of cool to see that because it's something that I think a lot of people kind of just overlook what actually goes into creating these phones, the amount of like R&D that goes into creating just this. They're like, let's just show you what we actually did to make this. So it's cool.
Do you feel like when you hold it up, it sucks the light out of the room? It's so black that it's
kind of a little bit. Yeah. It just looks so good on camera though.
This is a really good example though of just as you were saying, David, everything's incremental at this point. It's hard to think of what you could do that would get people to go, oh, I gotta have that. That's fantastic. That's a huge improvement. At this point, it's just this a little here, a little nudge there. Even Apple's having a little bit of that problem.
Oh, they also announced the trackers, the tags as well.
Right.
So you've got one of those
smart
too.
Tag. And then they have so is it better than a tile? It looks just like a tile.
I mean, they're all essentially the same thing. And I know there's been rumors that Apple is going to be also making that, but I was joking. I feel like they were waiting for Samsung to do it. And probably next week, they're going to be like, hey, guess what we have?
Yeah. That's funny.
Surprise.
It does require a Samsung phone for some of the features, right? You can't.
Yeah. So the one thing that it does require a Samsung phone for, what they want to do is they want to, like Tile, create a network of tracker tags that can then ping each other and create a sort of mesh. So if you lose something, then you can use other people's smart tags to ping your tag using the Samsung. This isn't live yet. It's next year, I think they said it's coming out, or they're going to start testing it later this year. So theoretically, it would allow you to extend the range for finding things. Granted, the number of places you're going to find that many smart tags outside of Korea, I don't think you can. You don't need a hand to count them because I don't think they ever will be. But they are coming out with a new version, or a different version, I should say, of the smart tag later this year.
Yeah, so that's going to be the one with ultra wideband, right? They don't have a UWB yet in this.
Yeah, and I'm actually, that's the one I'm curious to test. This current Bluetooth only one is kind of like, well, it's Tile, but with the promise of ecosystem that I don't think will ever, you know, right. materially, you know, occur. The ultra wideband version, the idea with ultra wideband, if you'd seen how, you know, UWB is used with the HomePod and the iPhone, is you have that really, really, really fine grain, you know, degree of like when the phone understands when it's near something, because you need direct line of sight for these frequencies. They won't penetrate almost anything. I don't think even at 9 gigahertz you'll penetrate a piece of paper. But it's basically so you can get that like fine, like if you're looking for something under the couch, or if you're looking for something, you know, that's like somewhere in the room but you don't know where exactly, the idea is you can have that much more fine grain degree of control finding something. But until we use them, you know, I really don't know what the experience is going to be like.
That's in theory what Apple's going to do if they ever do whatever that is that they're going to do. It will use UWB, so you'd be able to aim your iPhone and say, is it under the couch, where is it exactly? That's kind
and
of neat.
Then idea. I suppose it could be off and you could still find it, which is the problem
right.
with Find My iPhone, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or you could put in your keys or your remote control, the things we really lose a lot. Mm-hmm. All right, let's take a little break. We'll talk more with our panel. Denise Howell's here, the internet's lawyer. Is that what we should call you from now on, the internet's lawyer?
That's what I used to call This Week in Law, the Web's Law Department.
The Web's Law Department. I like it. Although, unlike Rudy Giuliani, she's going to get paid.
Let's hope.
Oh, my God. Also with us, Justine Azarek, wonderful, talented, youtube.com/iJustine. In fact, do you still have like Mommy Make My Lunch? Do you still have those old sites? You used to have a ton, like so many places I could find you.
There were so many. Now it's just iJustine, and then me and my sister do a podcast called Same Brain. So that's where you can find
awesome.
That.
Awesome. The winner of the 7,000th show of The Price is Right, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, wow. Yes. I should put that in my Twitter bio.
There you go. There you go. And David Ruddock, editor-in-chief, the boss at Android Police. Fun panel. Perfect panel for the news of the week today. Our show today brought to you by the folks at IT Pro TV. IT Pro TV is, I kind of have a soft spot in my heart for those guys, Don Pizzette and Tim Broom. They started IT. They originally were IT trainers in the classroom setting. And they started IT Pro TV because they saw what we did with Twit. They went to an event. I was on a panel at NAB and they said, hey, you know, it'd be kind of cool to do IT training streaming live on the internet, and IT Pro TV was born. And of course, they've gotten so big, so much better than anything we've done now. They've got training in every area of IT. It's a great place to go if you want to get a job in IT, because you often have to get the certification before you can get the job. They'll train you to the certs, but it's gotten to be so much more. Companies with IT departments will buy company subscriptions so that their IT team can keep up to date on new technologies, new versions. Anybody in IT really needs to know about IT Pro TV. They have exactly what you need to get started on the right foot in IT education. They're all professionals in the field, but they keep it interesting. And you can watch it on your big screen TV, on your computer, on your phone, on your Apple TV, your Roku, wherever you are. January is getting started in IT month at IT Pro TV. It's a great time to get started with a new career in the IT industry. And by the way, if there's one industry that's growing during the quarantine, it's IT. You can catch two new webinars for budding IT pros, a free training weekend with 5 courses available free, no charge. Tons of videos on their YouTube channel, also free, about starting a new career in IT. With plans for business, your IT team will actually use, or a personal plan that will help you accelerate your IT career, IT Pro TV is your one-stop shop. Microsoft, Cisco, Apple, Linux, they're the only official video training partner for CompTIA. Those are the very desirable A+, Security Plus, Network Plus certs, the ones that really are kind of the certs you need to get a job in the business, but they also have Microsoft training, Cisco, Apple, Linux, security, every phase, every part of IT. And you don't have to worry about what to do, what to pick. They've got these great learning coaches that will help you decide what IT, you know, field you want to get into and tell you what courses you need to take to get in that field. They also have fantastic job resources so you can get that first job or a new job. You're always going to be supported with IT Pro TV's amazing team. Look at that. 5,800 hours of IT training in every possible area. I want to plug their podcast too. Don Pezet does a great podcast called TechNado. It's about the IT industry with guests, IT news. So it's a great way, and it's free if you just want to keep up with what's happening in the industry. Look, this is a great time to get into IT, a new career in IT, or to get a better job in IT, or to polish your skills. It's fun, it's entertaining, and it's very informative, always up to date. Go to itpro.tv/twit, and right now, if you use the offer code TWIT30, you'll get 30% off all consumer subscriptions. itpro.tv/twit. Use the offer code TWIT30 for 30% off. As long as you stay active, it will be 30% off. And that's pretty amazing. That's a good deal. IT Pro TV, build or expand your IT career and enjoy the journey. Thank you, IT Pro TV, for supporting us all these years. We're glad to be partnered with you. And thank you, dear listener, for supporting us by going to that special address, itpro.tv/twit, and using the code TWIT30. That way they know you saw it here. itpro.tv/twit. So every year at CES, I make it my mission when I go to find a trend. David, is there any sense of a trend this year at CES?
I mean, you know, you have the kind of the standards. You have TVs, you have laptops, and you have kind of, you know, now smart home. The one I think I would say really the trends that actually stuck out as not being as prominent were the ones that were more noticeable to me. I mean, you had automotive essentially drop off a cliff. There were some announcements from like Cadillac, but these are mostly concepts. They're not real things. And I think you saw that area drop off. You saw smart home drop off like we discussed. Mobile at CES is essentially dead. There's no more of that. So I think the theme really was that CES this year slimmed down to kind of its core competencies, which tend to be, like I said, TVs, laptops, and then, you know, to an extent still smart home. But overall, you know, for us and the way we cover it, obviously we're covering it from more of a mobility perspective. And so what we end up seeing are mostly the laptops this year.
Right.
But as a trend, I think that, you know, you saw the bigger players, you know, with more announcements, and then you saw the smaller players kind of step back. If I were to say there's a particular product niche that had a high level of interest, I think laptops for sure, just because the demand is through the roof. We've seen the numbers about PC sales going up for the first time in a decade. So everybody wants to jump on, you know, the work from home train because they either have to or, you know, they're looking for better tools to work from home. And I think that, you know, you'll see probably over the next year, you'll see more and more innovation in laptops and probably desktop computing too. You know, if what Apple's working on turns out to be true. So I'm looking forward to all that. And I think CES is probably just a taste of what we're going to see for the rest of the year.
It's kind of hard to show off TVs on a virtual screen. It's kind of hard to show off self-driving cars if you can't get in them. I think maybe there is no way you can't really judge CES this year. What about those crazy rollable LG and TCL showed rollable phones and rollable screens? They had TCL that had the tablet that was a scroll? But yeah. Again, we can't look at them in real life and say, well, that'll never work.
Yeah.
The thing too is what I was gonna say, like most people, they end up seeing it through all of our coverage anyway. So yeah. They're just kind of envisioning it from our show floor footage as well. But I think talking about trends, the buzzword that I just kept hearing over and over was AI, AI this, AI that. Yeah. And at some point I'm like, what even does it mean?
What does it mean? Yeah.
This AI toothbrush, which I actually have one of the Oral-B IO toothbrushes, and their AI is pretty incredible.
Wait a minute. Is that, I have that too. Is that the one that you turn on your phone and then you brush your teeth and it says, okay, now you got to do this part. Now you got to do this part. And then it sparkles when you're done. That one? Yeah.
Yes, it is.
I mean, I wouldn't call that AI, but still.
Well, I know, but like that's like, I guess for people, like that's what they're saying it's AI fun. Is.
Yeah.
It is.
I guess it's got to be trained so that the accelerometer and the brush really, it doesn't know that you're brushing your lower right-hand corner, but thanks to training with models that can kind of, oh yeah, when they do that, that's the lower right hand corner. I guess that's AI.
It's like Roomba for your mouth.
Yeah, it's Roomba for your mouth, except you have okay. to push it. It doesn't do it automatically.
But that's a far better catchphrase.
Roomba for your mouth. I don't know, really, but it shows on the screen, right? It shows where you are in your mouth. And you got to do this. And my teeth never were cleaner than when I did that.
That's what I said. And I first tested that out last year at CES. And then they made me give it back because it was a prototype. So then I went for like 6 months without having perfectly clean teeth until it finally came out. Those are the types of things that you can't really experience. Like I went to the booth, got the toothbrush, right. tried it for 2 days, and then I had to give it back. But yeah, the AI, the automotive is all kind of very interesting. And it was kind of cool because my sister actually hosted some of the GM interviews. So they were able to like pre-record, have all of this content ready. So by the time actually CES came around, you were able to like watch all of this content. But yeah, I mean, as far as mobile is concerned, CES is not the place for that. And I feel like all these companies, everyone's just kind of figuring out how to do it on their own and to make the buzz without the help of like these larger companies or platforms. They're just like, we're going to do it and we're going to hopefully, you know, just hope for the best.
Yeah, Sam Abul Samid, our car guy, was talking on the radio show about GM announcing this new commercial EV brand. FedEx is going to do it. It's called, Bright Drop. And one of the things that's cool about it, it has in the truck, it has an automatic electrically powered pallet. You put the packages on the pallet, they get loaded in the truck and then offloaded from the truck automatically, which is kind of cool. I think that a lot of the companies that are doing EVs and self-driving have realized that the future for them is going to be in business sales and commercial use, at least initially, because I don't know. You drive a Tesla, right, Justine, or do you?
I don't know. I still have not got an electric vehicle yet, and I'm just kind of like that perfect thing.
Oh, yeah.
I did pre-order the Tesla Cybertruck, though.
Did you really? I can see you in that.
I've always wanted a Ford Raptor, and I was just about to buy one, and then the pandemic hit, and I was like, well, I'm not going anywhere.
You got to get driving gloves with metal studs, pointy metal studs, if you're going to drive that, because that's...
I love it. It's pretty cool, so I'm definitely excited to test that out. But GM also showed off their Hummer at CES, too, their electric Hummer, which looks incredible.
See, that's one I want to get in. I want to see. I don't want to see it on the screen. I've seen pictures of it. I want to get in it.
How ironic is that? The electric Hummer.
I know.
Right?
It's Hummer for people like you and me, Denise, who have felt guilty about driving a gas-guzzling, giant military truck. But, hey, if it's electric, it's green.
Well, then the problem with a lot of these electric vehicles is where do you charge it once everybody has one?
Huge
and, like,
problem.
The Tesla infrastructure is so superior to everything else. Like, if you don't have a Tesla, you might be struggling to have these charging stations.
Yeah,
and just charging it at home. I mean, my power bill's bad enough without an electric Hummer in the garage.
Well, so that's why we bought more solar panels and Tesla Powerwall batteries and all of that, because Lisa drives a Bolt. I'm going to have the Mustang Mach-E. I love it that I can get in the car and it's got a full tank of electricity in the morning. And I remember when I dropped off the we had an Audi, our last gas vehicle. We dropped it off a couple of weeks ago, and I remember thinking the last time I was at a gas station, I'll never see you again. Goodbye.
Yeah, I think that you're dead on about the charging infrastructure is a problem, I think that the fact is EVs are for that reason just targeted at homeowners right now. If you own a home, an EV makes a lot more sense. You know, as soon as you get that level two charger in there, it's pretty easy.
And if you're in an apartment, it's a challenge. I don't know how you would do it, or if you rent it, I don't know how you would.
I live in an apartment complex, and we have four ChargePoint chargers
for 400 people or something, right?
But they're not in use as often as you would think. I mean, it is getting there. Granted, living in the Bay Area, everything EV is about a year ahead of the rest of the country, at least. But I feel pretty confident, especially watching where Ford and other EV manufacturers are now like seeding press cars, that the charging infrastructure is there enough for them to, you know, start making a credible argument that these vehicles are pretty livable as long as you live in the right part of the country.
The Rivian is also pretty awesome. I did see that last year at CES, so I'm really interested to check that out. But the problem is, a lot of these people, if you want to have a self-driving car, you have to go Tesla route because,
right.
Great, there's a difference between an electric car and then, oh, this one drives for me. So I think, you know, Tesla is really the only option.
Ford has promised us Mach-E owners that they will 6 months from now ship in a self-driving feature. But I think like GM's self-driving feature, it'll be limited to highways and there'll be all sorts of limits on it. Last week on MacBreak Weekly, David Polk was saying his Model 3, it'll get them on the on-ramp. It'll get them off the on-ramp. It sees stop signs, speed limits. They're getting better. I have a death grip.
I would be very scared. I'm not ready. Like, I'm not ready to play Animal Crossing and let it drive me to the mall.
So this week, Google completed its Fitbit acquisition. Seemed to take forever to do that. They reiterated, there's Rick Osterlo writing on the Google Keyword blog that they, oh, don't worry, your privacy is protected. The deal has always been about devices, not data. He writes, we've been clear since the beginning. We will protect Fitbit users' privacy. Do you believe him? You trust him? I think there are a lot of people who might say, I'm not buying a Fitbit if Google owns it.
At some point, I just had to give up.
Yeah. Google knows everything anyway.
What do you want? Do you want to know how many steps I took last week? Like, you know, the thing is just the advertising is just so wild. Like, I will mention something. Like, I was talking yesterday on Twitter about a chainsaw, and now all I'm getting is Home Depot ads.
Really?
So it's the targeting.
So they're watching your Twitter as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's everywhere, but Instagram especially. I mean, you mentioned anything. Like, we would play this game where you would just say something over and over again and just wait to see what the ads were.
Okay, so my daughter swears that her friend had her phone open on Instagram, but that's it, and said baby duck like 5 times and started getting ads for baby ducks. Does that really happen?
I think you have to ask Cash Hill. She did a lot of research on that.
And what did she say? Did she say no?
Wrote about it. I think she concluded it's inconclusive.
Yeah.
That it certainly feels like that's happening, but that she didn't gather any evidence concretely that it is.
It would be hard to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. There'd be a lot to listen to. Imagine all the data you'd be collecting if you were Instagram.
I think it's even the things that you're connected to. Like, I was then searching for a chainsaw because then somebody on Twitter said I was using the wrong one. So I'm like, well, what's the right one? So I was like, there's now chainsaw police telling me that I'm not using the right one for the job. I'm like, I use a chainsaw once a year. Let me
just get whatever I want. Okay. Oh yeah. The chainsaw police are real. That is absolutely true. Yeah.
Like, there's a recall. You need to return that or you're going to get injured. But then, you know, those simple searches now are in my trends of I'm getting the Home Depot ads. And I've actually bought a lot of things from Instagram ads that I've been served. I'm like, you're right. Yeah. I do this.
Oh, Instagram ads work. That's why I'm not on Instagram. I pretend it's because I don't like Facebook, but really it's because I kept buying crap. And if somebody...
I get it.
You know why? Because it's the middle of the night and your defenses are down and you're scrolling and you go, oh, I really have to have that toaster cozy. I really need that. And then you buy it. And the other thing is it's gotten easier and easier to buy, especially on an Apple phone, because you just click the button twice. It goes bing, and you bought it. You bought a toaster cozy. Oh, you bought 6 of them. Nice. Share them with all your friends. Apple is planning a podcasting subscription service, according to the information. I don't know if this is real.
I believe it 100%. I think that this is a very lucrative area in terms of like popular culture podcasts going
talk
on
to
right
me.
Now.
Yeah. Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah.
I think, you know, as somebody who listens to a podcast that, you know, is on, I'm blinking.
Spotify?
It is on Spotify. It's a Spotify exclusive. And they also run a crowdfunding
Patreon.
Page. Yeah. Patreon.
Yeah.
And they make $250,000 a month on
what?
Patreon. Yeah.
What?
And they
What
also,
show is
you know,
that?
It's called The Last Podcast on the Left. It's kind of a very macabre show about, you know, murderers and cults and things like that. It's in the comedy genre. So I think that, you know, there is a lot of money out there in these super big popular culture shows. And I think it makes sense for Apple to get on board with it, because honestly, as soon as Spotify bought this or basically bought rights to this podcast, I had to start using the app. There is no escape.
Oh, and so that was the thing that interested me. They did the same thing with Joe Rogan. Is will subscribers to that show say, okay, I'll use Spotify, or will they say, I'm not going to listen to the show anymore?
I think most will subscribe. I think it works. I mean, think about, you know, streaming TV and TV shows. It's kind of the same thing in a sense. I mean, that's simplifying things, but it's the same reason, you know, it's the same reason they want the control. So I think that there's a lot of money there that's going to be changing hands in the coming years.
Wow.
Well, and streaming TV has conditioned us to this death by a thousand cuts situation where you're going to be paying just small increments of money for your media in millions of different ways.
I thought people were just going to kind of give up on that. There would become a point where they just go, I'm not taking another $8 charge. But I guess we just go, okay, it's on the credit card. I don't even think about it anymore.
Well, and it's always driven by that thing you want to watch, right?
Right.
It's only available on that one service.
Yeah.
And if it's David's favorite show, of course he's going to. So, I mean, I think it'd be sort of that same thing.
You're an expert on monetization, Justine.
Yeah, but it's also interesting because, you know, we've tried to see that trend of getting, you know, influencers to do traditional TV, and it doesn't normally work because a lot of times people get the content where they want to get it. So that's why I post stuff everywhere, because
that was, you know, my thought.
There is crossover, but there's also not. Like, I even love consuming content on Instagram the most when I'm looking for content for my friends. Like, that's where I like to watch and see that short form content. So it's kind of like I do have to produce for everything.
Yeah. So the world is changing very rapidly, isn't it? It's just a.
Yeah. I mean, even streaming, as far as like the crowdsourcing and streaming on like YouTube and Twitch. And then there's so many different ways on there to make money with like the donations and, you know, merch and things like that. So it's pretty shocking, like the amount of ways that you're able to monetize now.
Do you spend a lot of time thinking about that, or do you have an overarching philosophy and you just, my philosophy is mine was always be everywhere your listeners are. That's just, you know.
I think I just do it until I don't enjoy it anymore. So like I was getting bored with TikTok, so I just kind of didn't do that anymore. And then now I'm kind of like, okay, I think I want to go back to TikTok. So I wouldn't say my strategy is the best, but for me, it's keeping myself motivated and entertained just to keep making content. So if I don't want to do something, like, I'm not going to do it.
You have a rabid fan base. Do you think about that? Do you say, what do they want me to do? Where are they? Where should I be? Or do you just do your thing and trust that they'll follow?
YouTube is sort of the main kind of thing. And then I'll just take those pieces of like a main YouTube video and kind of parse that out throughout like Instagram, Twitter and stuff like that. And then the streaming stuff has been fun because that seems like a more rabid type of audience because it is live. You can basically only see that at the time that I'm doing it. And then with things like Clubhouse, have you joined that yet?
No. What's that?
So it's like a new type of app that is audio only. And it is currently like invite only. So you have to be like nominated by somebody. But it has sort of this fascinating appeal of there's no video, there's no recording, there's no DMs. Really, the only way that you can talk to people is if you get a notification that pops up that says, these five people are chatting, join now. So you click join and it's all audio. So you can kind of like take the stage. So it could be even something interesting for you to even look into. You could be doing this also on Clubhouse as well. So it's kind of cool. And then you can have people kind of come in and out. I can send you an invite if you want to check it out.
Yeah.
But it's kind of this sort of fascinating new thing that
it's good to
when
know
I first
somebody.
Joined.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. It's
do you,
cool.
But and would you just do it like, oh, I got some free time. I'll open up a Clubhouse and chat with people.
Yeah. So last night I was driving to pick up food to take to my sister's house. And I got a notification that a bunch of YouTubers were in. Renee Ritchie was actually in there chatting. And so I clicked it. And I was just going to drive and just listen to like my friends talking. And then they're like, oh, Justine's here. So then you take the stage and then that you just start talking and chatting. So it's kind of like a live voice chat that people can kind of listen in. So there's like a little crowd and an audience. And then you can just have people talk. And it's cool because the etiquette there too is you can just leave and you don't have to be like, hey, I got
to
go.
You have to
just
say
go.
Bye.
No one like judges you. It's great.
It sounds like as soon as this is no longer members only or so exclusive, it's
right
going to have a chat roulette problem.
Yeah, right downhill.
For sure. I've already kind of accidentally clicked into some rooms that I'm like, oh, I shouldn't be here because the notification pops up. So if I'm following somebody else who went into a room that I wouldn't want to go in, it tells me that so-and-so is there. So I click, I'm like, oh gosh, I wasn't here.
If you send me an invite, I will only follow you.
Okay, I will
only
you can follow a couple other people and then you'll see some cool notifications pop up. So I will send you an invite and you should check it out.
Oh, thank you, Justine. It's nice to have friends in high places. How interesting. Yeah, that's what I love about, in a way I love about this, is there's this kind of infinite creativity and people are trying different stuff. And every time something new crops up, it seems like there's some groups, people like I, Justine, who are able to kind of continue, but there's also a whole new bunch of creators that seem to fit the TikTok mode, or I guess it'll be the Clubhouse mode next, and they do well.
Yeah, it's really interesting. It's a cool new platform, and I think it's gonna. I think it'll do well. Nice. There's definitely like an audience for it. I think for what you're doing now too, like this type of podcasting could be great just to open it up, and people can just kind of listen in another avenue to it.
Clubhouse mode. All right.
Mm-hmm. Wow, it would be a neat way to do IRC. I mean, it wouldn't.
Yeah,
be
instead of having a chat room where you type, you have a chat room where you talk. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm getting too old. I don't know. I don't understand this. I can't. I don't know.
It's a lot.
I don't really understand it. Do you ever feel like, oh, it's just going too fast? I can't keep up.
Yes.
Really? Even you? Okay.
Oh, for sure. Oh, definitely. Because it's like I want to do more, but also, you know, I think why I've always loved doing this so much is because it is coming from me. Like every single video that I post, I have done something on it. Like I've exported it and uploaded it. If I didn't edit it, like I've done something on it. So, you know, not a lot of creators still do that, but it's like, for me, it is a personal thing. And I still do enjoy that part of it.
You're old school, man.
Yeah, I know, but it's exhausting.
You do have the cleanest garage I've ever seen. Do you still have that Xbox refrigerator?
I do. So I realized that I'm probably never going to go back to a real gym again. So before the whole pandemic and stuff started, I started jiu-jitsu like 3 years ago.
Oh.
So being able to do close contact sports is something that you really can't do anymore. So I'm trying to convince my sister to train with me and then hopefully have some COVID safe people that I'll be able to train with. So I turned it into a gym. I have mats and an Xbox fridge. So it's quite exciting.
You and Snoop Dogg are the only two people in the world. Actually, I guess one lucky contestant probably is one as well, who have Xbox refrigerators.
So I've realized I can't ever get rid of this refrigerator. Like, this is with me for life now.
Is it like a Sub-Zero? It looks really nice, except that it
doesn't have a freezer.
You're kidding.
It doesn't have a freezer.
It doesn't. It's a massive fridge, but it's actually quite exciting to have quite a large fridge. But this was a life-size, it's like a replica of the actual Xbox X box, the retail box. And then inside of it was like the refrigerator.
That's so crazy. Tell me the truth though. Did you clean up your garage for this or did it look like that before?
Oh no, I had to clean it.
Oh good. Yeah. Thank God. Oh my for God. Sure. Look at that knife. Holy cow.
Just a little machete.
There's a chainsaw. You know.
Now I know why you need a chainsaw.
That is a pretty incredible machete.
Did you have that before? Or does it come with the Xbox refrigerator?
I did have that. Yes,
that was part of my house. Unboxing seriously. Wait a minute. Now there's a sword.
Well, that's a Bowie knife. It's just, you know, no big deal. I have a lot of knives, so that's just, you know, my other hobby.
Oh my God. Okay, people should know that. That's good to know. Justine has a lot of knives, gentlemen. Just keep that in mind.
I have to note, does the Xbox refrigerator just look like an Xbox or does it actually play games?
It's just a refrigerator. Yeah, if you want to look at that video, you could actually see what it looks like.
Why even bother?
Right. Well, I can't even get a normal sized Series X, But you got a refrigerator-sized Series X. But
well,
it doesn't
I think they were
games.
Trying to find somebody that would be able to fit it someplace because you actually couldn't put it in the house. Like, it will not go through any normal size doors because of it has, like, an outer shell on it. But it was it's definitely something, and there's only three of them.
It's just a refrigerator, kids. Don't get your hopes up. We had a fun week this week on Twit. We've got a little short movie that we made to fill you in case you missed anything. Watch. All right. Every year at this time, we do it. Take a look at your pedometer. How many miles have you walked at CES this year?
Looking at my pedometer right now, I'd say 0.26.
Not a lot of walking this year.
Previously on Twit. All about Android.
TCL actually had a lot of news, the rollable tablet concept. And this is actually really interesting because it's not just rollable. It's like a scroll.
Hands-on photography.
Yeah, I'm going to show you how to add a little bit of mood and atmosphere to your favorite photographs.
This Week in Google.
Yeah, the nature of the internet is it's whack-a-mole. You can't successfully block all of this.
But we spend all of our time thinking, there's somebody bad on the internet, I can't go to bed. When what we need instead is institutions and structures to emphasize and amplify the good.
Twit News.
Samsung has announced today the S21 5G, the S21 Plus 5G, and we've got the premium of the premiums, the S21 Ultra. That starts at $1,199, right, which actually is kind of a little bit lower than I think I expected. Which is not to say that it's inexpensive.
Twit.
Doesn't less include the S-Pen.
Crazy expensive.
For help with a technology addiction problem, call 1-800-TWIT.
That's the great, immortal Jim Cutler, our VO guy. He is just incredible. You probably hear him on your local radio or TV, or he does a lot of national voiceovers as well. Our show today brought to you by the best bed in the business, Casper. I just bought, I don't know, this might be my fourth Casper. I keep buying Caspers. Not for me. My daughter moved into a new apartment. I said, honey, I'll take care of the bed. And I got her, and it was a great deal. The Casper frame, the box spring, they call it the foundation. And then on top of that, I didn't spend a ton of money. I got the Casper original. It's a really nice mattress. I even got her some sheets and pillows from Casper. They are the place to go to get your sleep in order. Sleep is so important. Don't, you know, take it seriously. Here I am with my brand new, I think this was the Wave Hybrid. Another one of my Casper collection. I have quite a few. I love Casper mattresses. Only Casper mattresses are made with 86 supportive gel pods to align your spine, eliminate aches and pains, give you the supportive comfort you need to wake up refreshed and ready to go all year long. One of the things I love about Caspers, first of all, they come in that surprisingly compact box. You open up the sealed, they must have a giant, seal-a-meal to put those in there. Because once you open it up, whoosh, and it smells fresh the minute you open it. You don't have to air it out. It's so comfortable. Caspers are amazing because they both give you great support, so your back is well supported, but they also kind of mold where you need it. It's supportive comfort and it's soft. It's hard to describe. I don't know how to describe it. Doesn't it look comfy? You just got to try it. The Wave Hybrid, perfect for people who have aches and pains and want a mattress with lots of support and cooling. For the most plush mattress, if you really like soft, you try the Nova Hybrid. It's plush. It's luxurious. But there's still that great support. See, even Sammy, our cat, loves the Casper mattress. Or, of course, the original mattress. That's what I got, Abby. It's the one for sleepers who want both support and cooling. She loves it, of course. And you can't have a Casper unless you have an original Casper pillow. It's made with that unique pillow and pillow design that's soft on the outside, supportive on the inside for all-night comfort. Casper makes everything you need to refresh your whole bedroom this year, from their super soft percale sheets to their all-season down duvets to their cozy, calming weighted blanket. Wait, they make a weighted blanket? I got to get that. And I love the Casper glow light. That is perfect. Look, I live the La Vida Casper. That's me. As always, free shipping and free returns, no contact delivery. You have 100 nights. If at any time you're not happy, Casper comes, they get it, they refund every penny. Make 2021 comfortable Reset your rest. Go to casper.com/twit1. Twit and the number one. Use the code TWIT1 for $100 off select mattresses. That's TWIT and the number one, all one word, for $100 off select mattresses. I love Casper. Terms and conditions apply. See casper.com for more details. casper.com/twit1. Thank you, Casper, for your support of This Week in Tech.
You look like an expert YouTuber in that ad, but you're going to need a better knife.
I need a machete. I need the iJustine brand machete, the unboxing machete. Oh, there's your doggy.
There's Maddie. Hi, buddy. Where'd you go? He wants to hide to our friend.
Oh, look. Oh, is he cute?
Just got a haircut, so he kind of, he had a real special look right now.
Is he a poodle? What is he?
He's a poodle Bichon, yeah.
Oh, I had a Bichon. I love Bichons.
He's so sweet. He's actually a DJ, so he has a little DJ set, and he'll play it. Like, you just tell him time to DJ, and he just starts going to town.
There he goes.
Oh, good boy.
Getting in bed. They have Casper has dog beds, too, by the way.
Saw that. It's incredible.
They're really nice. I wish I had a dog. I'm almost like I'll get a dog just so I can get the Casper bed.
I'm thinking about it.
Let's see what else here. TikTok. Oh man, they said that if you're 13 to 15, your videos are private by default, which means you no limits who you can comment on the videos or whether people can remix it or download it. Do you think we need to stand up for the 13 to 15 year olds, Justine?
You know, I've seen some of the things that people post and I kind of think it's a good thing.
Good idea. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know that parents like kind of know what their kids are doing and you don't want to be like hovering over, but it's scary because there's a lot of people out there that are seeing a lot of content and when you're able to remix it, like you're able to amplify that. So,
And when you're young, you don't understand what you're getting yourself into. I think you shouldn't be allowed to do it unless you're over 40.
That's a good point.
It sounds like they can just turn it off too, right?
Yeah, it sounds like it's just a switch. But maybe parents have to get involved. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't seem like the kind of person who uses TikTok, but I consume a lot of TikTok. And the issue with younger users is very real. The app appeals strongly to kids, like just by the nature of what it is.
I ask this every week. Maybe you know, Denise. Is TikTok still in business or did the president shut them down or what the hell's going on?
The president didn't shut them down.
He tried, right?
He tried. He did not succeed. And I think that the compromise that was reached was they're having a majority stake bought.
Yeah, wasn't Oracle, Oracle and Walmart supposed to buy them? And then, I don't know. This is the silliest story.
Yeah, it is a silly story.
And guess what? In 3 days, it's just going to go poof. It's going to go away. It's like, and if I'm TikTok, I'm going to be kind of annoyed because they had to go to court. They got TikTok creators to do class action lawsuits. They did all this stuff. And it's like, it was all for show. It never really.
It was a distraction from whatever was happening at that time. It's like, okay, we're just going to blame TikTok because this is sort of a buzzword. Let's just see what we can do to distract from whatever else is happening.
Oh, if you're Huawei or Xiaomi, you take this maybe a little bit more seriously, right, David? They're on the no-fly list or whatever CFIUS calls it.
Yeah. So, I mean, there were kind of two pieces of news, one that happened today and then one that happened later or earlier last week. Xiaomi was added to a list of companies that work or are alleged to work with the Chinese military, which forbids Americans then from holding investments in that company. That's basically as far as I understand, Denise, maybe you know better about this, that's as far as me following the story. I was just aware they've been added to that list, which is not the same list Huawei is on. Huawei is on a different list, a much worse one.
The DOJ says Xiaomi is a military corporation.
Yeah, they make all those Xiaomi tanks.
And by the way, Huawei is the number one phone brand in the world, right? Globally.
it won't be after this. I can assure you that. I mean, their shipments are already down and they don't have enough chips. They physically don't have the chips to make the phones at this point, at least not many more. So they're going to run into a rock and a hard place unless the Biden administration gives them a reprieve. I don't think Xiaomi will suffer much for this. I don't know how many American investors Xiaomi had, but I don't suspect it's a lot of them.
So it was Huawei, Samsung, Apple, and then Xiaomi now is third place as the largest seller of smartphones. Now, Huawei makes 5G networking equipment, and I think you could make a reasonable case that we don't want infrastructure built on stuff that is kind of beholden to the Chinese government. But smartphones may be a little bit different, and Xiaomi does not make 5G or networking gear at all, right? Just smart devices.
Yep, essentially. I mean, they make smartphones, and then there are some other products they make in other segments, or more, you know, what people more know them for are the companies they have investments in that make Mi branded products, which span everything from pillowcases to scooters.
But not My Pillow, Mi Pillow.
Yes.
Okay. It's very, very big difference.
It might help to think about it like you think about the RT network on television. You know, you the take Russian, that with a grain of
Russian news network. Yeah. They've not been banned.
No, they haven't. But
are they a bigger threat than TikTok? I think you might say they are.
They might be. But I mean, you're not putting your data into the RT television network.
Right.
So true. Maybe not. Yeah.
It's also kind of ties into like drones as well, because I know they banned like the DJI export import. I can't really speak to it 100% because I didn't do enough research, but that was also something that kind of came up over the past couple of weeks.
Yeah, my son has a DJI Phantom and is using the DJI virtual reality headset to do his first person FPV drone videos. And apparently you could still get all that stuff, even though they were also put on a list.
I think it's just going to affect manufacturing. So not necessarily if we're able to fly and things like that. Okay. I mean, I definitely think that drone regulations are important because a lot of people just think they're like fun toys that we can just go and do whatever. And it really is a big responsibility because you are responsible for this tiny little aircraft that could potentially hurt someone.
Right. Intel replaced their CEO, Bob Swan. He'll be stepping down next month. They're hiring the CEO of VMware, Pat Gelsinger, to take over the position. Intel really facing some tough economic headwinds. There's Dan Loeb, who's one of those activist investors. He urged Intel to explore strategic alternatives, which usually means to sell. They also said that Intel should divest from failed acquisitions and criticized Intel for its loss of manufacturing leadership. One of the things Gelsinger will have to decide is if Intel should continue to run its very expensive and money-losing chip fabrication facilities, or do as so many others have done and outsource that to companies like the Taiwan semiconductor manufacturer, TSMC. So I think a big change for Intel. It's been sad to watch what used to be a dominant company in the PC industry just suffer blow after blow after blow. We'll see if Pat Gelsinger can turn things around. I don't know. Any thoughts on that?
I mean, the sentiment I heard about Gelsinger overall seems quite positive. He's seen as a real company man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stock liked it for sure. That he's seen as a guy who really loves Intel and loves what the company's about and wants to set them on the right track. I think that, you know, the investors are always going to crow about taking action right now because they're concerned about the stock, because Intel stock is in the dump compared to where it was a year ago, at least. So I think that, you know, that noise is still at the point where we don't know if Intel is going to be able to make some advancements on its own nodes that can get it back to being competitive again, or if outsourcing really is the future for them. Yeah. And I think Gelsinger is going to help answer that question. But I don't think, you know, based on what we know so far, that Intel itself was not ready to make that decision. And they probably have to do, you know, answer a lot of really complicated questions before they make that decision. Because, you know, Intel's they're worth like $200 billion or $300 billion. Intel's a big company.
Yeah.
A lot of jobs, a lot of momentum in R&D, and a lot of, you know, roadmaps that could be gravely affected by a decision to outsource Foundry. And also that would be the death of chip foundries in the United States. That would be the end of it. So everything would essentially be foreign at any scale. So I think they will probably look very long and hard before deciding they want to totally outsource the business.
That was another question I got on the radio show today. Can I buy a PC that's entirely made in America? And I said, no. You can get one that's assembled in America, Apple's Mac Pro, that nice little Mac Pro that was made in Austin. But, it's full of Chinese parts. Good luck. Actually, the Chaos Computer Club, the great Berlin hacker confab, had an event in which a hacker showed that. Remember the Bloomberg story about Supermicro that somebody had placed a rice grain sized chip on the Supermicro micro motherboards, and it was being used to spy on the U.S. military. Yes. And then Apple and Amazon and everybody said that didn't happen. That never happened. Supermicro even went to the lengths to say it couldn't happen. You can't do that. Well, a hacker at the Chaos Computer Club has done it and said you absolutely can do it. It phones home. It changes how it works. He actually did it. So that's not proof that it was being done to Supermicro, but it is proof that you got to be careful about your supply chain and consider where those hardware pieces come from, because you don't know what's going on in there. And it's easy to do stuff like that. Not easy, but possible, I guess.
I feel like anything is possible. Like if you have a thought, if somebody has the will to do something, like they're going to figure it out.
Oh, good. Well, then you'll like this. Mark Lohr, who's the guy who founded diapers.com. Remember, Amazon took him down by undercutting diapers.com to the point where they were worthless, then buying the company. Well, not completely worthless. They spent $350 million to buy it. Mark went to work for Amazon, left after a little while, started Jet.com to try once again to take down Amazon. That didn't work so well. 15 months later, Jet.com was purchased. I think it was for billions. I think $3 billion. Yeah, $3.3 billion by Walmart to launch their e-commerce division. Mark Lohr stayed there for a while. He's just announced he's leaving. He's out of the e-commerce business. His new plan is to build, it's a multi-decade project to build a city of the future supported by a reformed version of capitalism. It's a new model for society we'll be testing. He said, he didn't say where it would be, but he did say that everyday citizens will direct the economic. They will give everyday citizens direct economic upside in the city's growth stock. I don't know. Imagine, he said, use your imagination now, a city with the vibrancy, diversity, and culture of New York City, combined with the efficiency, safety, and innovation of Tokyo, and the sustainability, governance, and social services of Sweden. This will be our new city. I wonder, is he going to put it on an island? Is he going to carve out a part of the North Dakota countryside? Is it going to be in a missile silo?
There's no location. It's just I'm going to do this.
He's got the money. He's got billions. I don't know.
Maybe it'll be on Jack Dorsey's island.
Yeah. Or Larry, right next to Larry Page's island. It's going to be great. I tell you what, I will move there, Mark. If you want me to, we'll do Twit from your island any day. I like that idea of the city of the future.
I'm just reminded
is there 5G?
Of the
they're better. Ah.
I'm reminded of the book A Libertarian Walks Into a Bear, which is about a group of libertarians who moved to a town in Vermont, overwhelmed it to the point where they had all the voting majority in the town for any town issues, and essentially tried to deregulate the entire town.
Oh God, what happened?
It ended with some bear attacks. After people weren't burying the trash properly because there were no rules. It's great.
No rules, and you're going to get bears. I'm just saying. Pop quiz. Who is America's top farmland owner? According to...
I know because I read the rundown. Yeah,
I gave you the answer ahead of time.
Yeah.
Good. You all did your work. According to the Land Report, Bill and Melinda Gates own 242,000 acres of land. The reporter, Eric O'Keefe, had to do quite a bit of digging because Gates has been doing this with the usual way, shell companies hiding But he was clued in by a weird story that a 14,000 acre swath of eastern Washington farmland had just been sold for $171 million. And he said, wait a minute, that's an awful lot of money, $12,000 an acre. But it is, whoever bought it, he says, knew what they were doing, because it's actually really good farmland. He did a little more research, and it turns out Bill Gates has been buying up farmland. As you know, the guy's got some money, so he's probably, you know, it's hedging his other investments, but kind of interesting. Just thought I'd pass.
That is strange, and I want to read this story now. It looks pretty fascinating.
Yeah. This is the map of the Gates' land holding. It's all over Washington, Idaho, California, Arizona, Florida. He's got 14,000 acres in Florida, 16,000, almost 17,000 in Mississippi, almost 70,000 in Louisiana. It's all farmland. He's must know something.
Should I send him my resume of growing lettuce?
Yes.
I'm farming now.
You can grow lettuce in the air. You don't need farmland. You could do it yourself. Finally, the last story comes from the Register. Thomas Claiborne writing about Austin Sendek, who is at Stanford now. He was 10 years ago a physics student at UC Davis when he proposed a new unit of measurement. As you know, we've got bytes, kilobytes, megabytes, gigabytes, terabytes. We've got yottabytes and zottabytes. But what comes after a yottabyte? Well, he's from California. He suggested the hellabyte. Because it's a hell of a lot of bytes.
I like it.
Google supported it. They've actually added a bytes to hellabytes calculator. You can search on Google. So Wolfram Alpha supports hella calculations. There are other proposed terms. Brontobyte is another proposed unit. Unfortunately, I'm sad to say, there is a group that does, you know, decide all of this. In fact, the quadrennial meeting is coming up in November of 2022 of the International Bureau of Weights and Measurements General Conference on Weights and Measures. That's where changes to this SI system have to be made. And they say, you know what, we're gonna name something, but it's probably not going to be Brontobyte. It's probably not going to be Hellabyte. I think the front runners are really boring. Rana, R-O-N-N-A byte, 10 to the 27th, and Quetta, Q-U-E-T-T-A byte for 10 to the 30th. Those are the front runners, partly because they need a single letter abbreviation like M or G or T, and H and B are already taken. But in its defense, the hellabyte would be a hella good unit. For instance, the sun has a mass of 2.2 helatons. Pretty good, right? Releases energy at 3.3 helawatts, which is a lot better than 300 yottawatts. You can't even take yottawatts seriously. The number of atoms in 12 kilograms of carbon 12 would be, instead of 600 yotta atoms, it'd be 0.6 hella atoms. Again, I think it's on the face of it obvious this is a much needed improvement.
Well, as a Northern California native and UC Davis alumnus,
there you go.
Support the hella fight.
It's a hella good idea. You guys are great. Thank you so much for doing the show with me, Denise Howell. I miss you so much. I'm so glad we can get you on whenever we can. Really,
I
nice,
miss you too.
Really it's, nice to
it's
have.
It's great
you.
Yep. In these times to be able to connect in whatever way we can.
When I start my clubhouse, I'm going to invite you.
Thank you.
You'll be in my clubhouse.
That. You can do that.
You, me, Renee, and Justine, and David too. We'll all be in a little clubhouse together. That sounds like fun, doesn't it?
I can send you guys all invites. I have a couple if you don't have them.
Oh, that would be so awesome, Justine.
Awesome. Man. Great. I'll send you an email after this so I can get everyone's number.
It's nice to know somebody in the biz. You know what I'm saying? they're asking Denise, where's the rocket? Normally you have a rocket
ship. It's back there. It's just not in the shot.
Oh, okay. Okay. Did people pay attention to this stuff?
I know.
DeniseHowell.info. Anything you want to plug? At D Howell. There's the rocket ship. Yay.
There we go.
Just pan and tilt. That's all. Anything you want to plug, Denise? Anything you're up to?
The only thing I want to plug is I mentioned that we're in the process of getting various parents and grandparents vaccinated. Nice. And people should just pay attention to fact that even though we've been talking about these super high-tech smartphones that are being released and they have things like LiDAR and cameras that can do God knows what, most of our parents and grandparents don't have those. And what I'm learning the hard way is that they basically need to lean on us who know how to use any sort of smartphone or computer technology to get them signed up to get them vaccinated. So just bear that in mind, not just for your family, but the people around you who might be older and not so dialed in.
I was talking to my mom, who is 88, just last week. I said, Mom, you're getting the shot, right? She said, I haven't even gotten my flu shot. I said, Mom. So, yes, we will be arranging for Mom to get her. I said, call your doctor, see if you can get both the flu and the COVID vaccine at the same time. If not, let's get the COVID vaccine right now. Let's not waste any time. So that's a good point. Absolutely. Denise, is there a single website or that people can go to? Is there anywhere we can find out about this?
Oh, what I've been determining, at least in California, is that it's county by county.
Right. So you got to go to your county's site. CDC does have a page for the vaccines, but God, it's too bad that it's just not that well run.
Yeah.
iJustine is just iJustine. There's nothing more to plug. YouTube.com/iJustine. Just go there. Twitter @iJustine. Anything else you're up to?
And then I think in our podcast too, which we're still kind of new to podcasting, even though I did it so long ago, but that's called Same Brain. It's Same Brain. So we do that on usually every Saturday, although we didn't do one this week. So we'll just act like that didn't happen.
Justine and Jenna. And if you Google Same Brain, you can just find it right away. Same Brain Podcast. Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, it's been really fun. And we just get to like chat. We usually do stuff with tech, but then we've done some really fun interviews as well. We did a really fun one with Tom Green at the beginning of the pandemic.
Oh, fun.
We did a very social distanced, because he's now actually traveling around the U.S. in a van. So we met up with him and we did a podcast in the back of my van, in the back of his van. So it was really cool to kind of just actually take the roadcaster out and do some fun on the road podcasting.
He was kind of ahead of the crowd. Didn't he used to do his show from his house?
Yeah, I mean, he basically created what we're all doing.
Yeah.
So it's kind of really cool to see him embracing YouTube. So he's been doing a bunch of videos and he's been creating a lot of content. And we actually started talking because the new Sony camera came out. And so he had some questions about it. So it's like, wow, that's kind of cool that you're kind of bringing this all back. And he's doing YouTube and podcasting and stuff too. So it's been really fun to kind of watch that all evolve, because he created what we're doing.
And great reviews on the Apple Podcast site. I got to encourage people to do good reviews for us. You know, we've been around so long that I think some of the reviews are 10, 15 years old. It'd probably be nice to have some new ones. Give us a good review on iTunes, if you would. That would be really great. It's so nice to see you, Justine. You got any big appliances coming in the near future that we should look out for?
Gosh, you know, I don't know, another console, refrigerator, maybe, who knows?
PlayStation barbecue.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, ask Sony, what do they got? I do notice you have those new $550 Apple headphones. You like them?
I love them. Yeah, they're great. But I do have to keep them plugged in, though, which this little cable, they need to come up with a better cable system, because it's very short, and you can only use the Apple one right now.
Cable not included. Yeah, it's only
$35.
Yeah, right. Okay. Thank you, Justine. And David Ruddick, it's so nice to meet you. Thank you so much. I've been seeing you regularly on the Tech News Weekly. I'm thrilled, and I'm all about Android, thrilled we can get you on the show and to talk about your area of expertise, which is pretty much everything. Anything you want to plug besides AndroidPolice.com?
Yeah, you can read AndroidPolice.com. You can find me on Twitter, RDRV3, where I talk about a lot of things that aren't tech, much to the chagrin of everybody that follows me.
Good. Good. You got to keep Twitter weird. That's my new motto. Thank you, David. Thank you, Justine. Thank you, Denise. Thank you all for joining us. We do This Week in Tech every Sunday afternoon, 2:30 Pacific, 5:30 Eastern, 22:30 UTC. Now, I tell you that time, not that you have to watch or listen at that time. Of course, it's a podcast. You can listen to it anytime you want. But if you want to watch us do it live and get the chatter before and after and all of that, that's why I tell you the time. The stream is twit.tv/live. There's a variety of audio and video streams there. You can pick the one you like. If you're watching live, chat with us live in our chat room, irc.twit.tv. Community run. It's a great place. Lots of fun people in there, irc.twit.tv. On-demand versions of the show, as with all of the things we do at Twitter, available on the website, twit.tv. You can also download them. There or audio or video, or you can watch on YouTube. Every one of our shows has a YouTube channel. We do not have a show TikTok channel, but I think there is a TikTok presence of some kind. It's January, time for our Twit audience survey. It helps us understand you so we can make your listening experience even better, and it helps us sell advertising. Completely anonymous, it'll only take 5 minutes. twit.tv/survey21. We also have a Twit forums at www.twit.community. That's a great place if you listen asynchronously to join the conversation. Every show gets an entry there, and you can comment there. I am no longer on Twitter. I am on twit.social, our Mastodon instance. You're more than welcome to join me there if you'd like. If you're already in the Fediverse, just @Leo@twit.social. But if you're not, you can create an account there and join the federated Mastodon. Actually, it's not just Mastodon. There are a lot of different programs that use that. And it's nice that it's federated, because that means you can follow people all over from your individual instance, in our case, twit.social. Of course, the best thing to do, if you would, for us, after you reviewed it on iTunes, is to get your favorite podcast client. If they take reviews, put a review there too. Download the show, subscribe to the show so you download it automatically the minute it's available of a Sunday evening. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time. Another Twit is in the can. Bye-bye, folks.